a friend of mine, Goldstein family, Shtiglum Chatan of mine. The father was an amazing person, and Rav Shraga Feivel Mendelovich sent him out to Detroit years ago to be Makariv people and set up Moisdais and organizations, and he was a very, very special person, beloved by anyone that really came into contact with him. And unlike some people, when people see them, they run out of the room. When people saw him, they went running towards him. One of the things his son told me was they lived in an apartment, a bunch of kids in a tiny apartment, and there was always Archim and guests, and any Mashulach that came to town always stayed in their house. That was a given. And once they got a new carpet, somebody donated a new carpet, and it was a white carpet, which wasn't a very good idea. And all of a sudden, there was this terrible pressure by the Shabbos table. You know, you're going to split. And that's it. And all the colored soda went down. All the seltzer came up. And all the kids were upset. And they were just spritzing it at each other and angry. And the chrein and everything was just like... But for the first time, people were getting on each other's nerves. And one day, the baby, like the three-year-old, came walking in with an open bottle of grape juice. She probably would have made it to the table on time, but when everyone saw the open bottle of grape juice and he's walking on the couch, everyone yelled, "No!" And he got so excited that he dropped the grape juice. And everyone stood there in horror as the contents of the grape juice bottle went cascading all over the white thing. And Rabbi Goldstein's reaction was, "Oh, Baruch Hashem, at least we're finished with that. You know? At least that's over with. You know, who needed that pressure? Who needed that tension? At least, Baruch Hashem, that's gone." So, there is a Sefer from Moshe Aaron Stern, Menucha V'Simcha, I think it's called, Menucha, I don't remember exactly, but brings there a beautiful story. His grandfather was the famous Rabbi Yaakov Yosef Herman, if you've read the book All for the Boss. And he also had a small apartment and with a tremendous heart, and all the tzaddikim of Europe when they came in those days stayed in that apartment. There was basically nothing there. And once... he writes that his grandmother told her husband she'd really love to have a new couch. And her father said, the husband of the house said, "If you really want, what do we need a new couch for? This couch has like so much experience, you know, it's been around so many years." She said, "Come on, I want a new couch." And he said, "You know who sat on this couch? I mean, all the big tzaddikim of Europe that were there." So he said, "Okay, we'll see, if you really want." And Reb Baruch Ber, the famous Kamenitsa Rosh Yeshiva, was staying in their house at that moment, and Rav Baruch Ber comes in. Rav Baruch Ber comes in, and she goes over to him and says, "You know, Rosh Yeshiva, can I ask you a question? I know this may sound like a trivial matter, but if you tell my husband, he'll listen." He says, "Go ahead. What's your question?" She says, "You think I'm entitled to a new couch?" He says, "You're entitled to a new couch. Well, let me tell you a story. Rav Baruch Ber was here to try to collect money to feed his Talmidim in Kamenitz, who were literally starving to death. And someone took them to a rich man's house on Madison Avenue, or his office. And they went in, and it was pouring outside. And as much as they took off their galoshes, and they did whatever they could to wipe their shoes, as they walked in, they sat down on this white couch, and they realized that there still must have been some mud on their shoes or on their sleeves. And this rich person walked in, looked at them, looked at the couch, shrieked in horror and said, "Look what you did!" And they all of a sudden, their tongues got all twisted and it didn't seem like the opportune time to ask him for a donation, and they just, they left. He said, "As I was walking into the house, you know, again, like this tension overwhelmed me. And I started scrubbing off the mud or off my galoshes, and my gabbai said to me, he said, 'Don't worry, Baruch Hashem, this is Rabbi Yaakov Yosef's couch. And then we could sit down comfortably.' He said, 'Listen, maybe you're entitled to a new couch, but come on, please. As long as I'm here, keep the old couch there.'" They kept the old couch indefinitely. So, what does this mean? Does this mean that we're not entitled to a nice couch? Does this mean that we are, or we ought not to look positively at getting the finer things in life? Is that necessarily negative? Is that wrong? But there is an issue of perspective that can turn all these things either into the biggest bracha or biggest klal. A friend of mine told me that he had an aunt who never had children, and she was always complaining why the kids don't come to visit her. And when the kids would come, it would be a nightmare. Don't touch it fast. Stay away from it. So like kids didn't want to go. And the worst thing was, her entire house was mirrors. She had mirrors around and around her house. Everything was mirrors. And if the kids would go near the mirror, don't, please, don't breathe on the mirror, please. Finally, okay, you know, auntie, it was nice visiting you. I think I'll take the kids now. Oh, you don't come. You come so little. You come so, you know, you don't come enough. And this and the end. And she goes, you want to tell her why we don't come enough? All right, there's a certain attitude. You complain, and then you complain that about the complaint. This is, someone tells me about his grandmother is in a hotel in Florida, and she calls up and says, it's terrible. She says, the food is poison, horrible. Besides that, everything is okay. And they serve so little, she says, such small portions. Right? Mm-hmm. It's the nature of a complaint. He said, this aunt passed away, and this person tells me he came with the kids to the apartment just to pick up whatever was left. He said, as soon as they walked in, he saw this tension over the kids as they stepped in. What are they going to get yelled at now for? And he told them, like, unfortunately, your auntie has passed away, and you can... Really? We can do whatever you want? As long as you're not reckless. They ran over to the mirror, and they went... and they started drawing on it, you know, with their breath. It was like this glee, this sense of... So this poor aunt, you know, imagine if she was looking down and saw the excitement on the kids, the anticipation on the eyes of the children, when they ran over to that mirror and they were finally able to release their breath onto the mirror. So, did his aunt enjoy the finer things in life? Or maybe what she really did was she isolated herself in a way where she wanted to create a certain sense of respect or identity or recognition, but what she was really doing was she was building a prison for herself and locking herself in it. The old comedy skit about the lion that's walking around and guy runs into his house, remember doing it in camp, and the guy runs into his house and he's in his room and he's petrified and he piles up a bed and a dresser on top of the bed and a chair on top of the dresser and a bench on top of the chair, and he forces the door and breathes a sigh of relief, and then he hears this roar and he turns around and the lion is in his room. And he locks himself into the room. In a sense, that's kind of what she did. She wanted a sense of respect and dignity, and that was her apartment. Her apartment was her life. A new vase was her life. A new mirror was her life. What she really wanted was to give her life meaning. In reality, she was really just building a prison for herself. There is a pasuk in Mishle. The pasuk says, Migdal Oiz Shem Hashem. Boy Yoritz Tzadik V'Nisgav. The name of Hashem is a tower of strength, where the tzadik can run and be strengthened. Conversely, there's another pasuk that most mefarshim learn. Hayin Asher Kiryas Uzay Ukechayma Nisgava B'Maskitay. Rich wealth is the stronghold of a rich person. It's like a reinforced wall on his tiled floor, but doesn't really get him anywhere. Now, what does it mean? Rich wealth is his stronghold, like a reinforced wall on his tiled floor. What Shlomo Melech is the smartest person in the world? We ought to listen to what he's telling us. Well, what does he mean over here with this pasuk in Mishle? You may know that there is a... you cannot bow down completely by the Kaisel. You're not allowed to bow down all the way to the floor. If you've ever looked at the old pictures of the Kaisel in the 1940s, people used to bow down all the way. Anyone know the reason that you can't do it now and you were able to do it then? Okay. Yeah, one reason. Besides that, yeah.
It had to be the level of the ground. Like, they dug deeper.
Okay, not necessarily, but the reason, the technical reason, is because there was an earth floor then, and now there's a tile floor, which is stone, and there is a din that you're not allowed to bow down onto tiles or marble, because the Torah says 11 maskis, you're not allowed to bow down because that was considered a like a shame of avodah zarah. So one of the reasons that we bow down, we don't completely bow down. It's also one of the reasons, if you've ever noticed, those people that have the minig on Rosh Hashanah, Yom Kippur, by Aleinu, or by the avodah, that they completely fall kairim onto the floor, so they give out newspapers or papers. That's not just to keep your pants from getting dirty. The purpose of giving out the newspapers is not just that people have something to do, at least have something to read when they get down. This guy falls kairim, you're supposed to say vidui, and he's crying and crying and crying. He says, wow, what vidui? He says, not vidui, he has the stock page open over there. That's the one he got put on there. Well, that got him to do tshuva, that's for sure. When I say there was a Rav and a bus driver came up after 120 years and they let the bus driver in first, you know, the Rav was very angry. They said, the bus driver, they said, listen, they said, I gave so many drushes, I got so many people to do tshuva. They said, you gave drushes, people fell asleep. On his bus, when he started driving, people were on his bus, then they started doing tshuva when they saw the way he was driving. Other way around. So, you're not allowed to bow down on a stone floor. The Chavetz Chaim had a very, very simple apartment. A very, very simple apartment. And if you ever seen the pictures of the Chavetz Chaim's house, it looked like you wouldn't even have a bungalow that way. It used to be what bungalows used to look like when I went to bungalow colonies as a kid. Now, of course, that's the tool shack for bungalow colony. We were happy with those things. Chavetz Chaim used to say he thinks it's foolish to put down a floor. He says, what do you need a floor for? I mean, the earth is there anyway. Even the ceiling, if you don't build the ceiling, you're not going to have one. But the floor is there anyway, right? There's the Sheish Shemei Bereshis. So what do you have to put down a floor for? Okay. All right. You're going to tell me, okay, so come on. So now I'm going to put down a floor. So I want to tell you that in my house, Baruch Hashem, there is a floor. And yes, it gets scraped and polyurethaned every single year. And I always wind up coughing and gasping to death, even though they say if you open up the windows for 3 days and you put, like, I don't know, 50 onions or 60 tomatoes, all kinds of skulas, the onions and tomatoes all shrivel to death. And, you know, you want to know what that does to your lungs. All I know is I remember this year, we went away for Shabbos, so we were told, you know, my wife said, don't worry, if you polyurethane on Friday, you'll see by the time you come back Monday morning, everything will be fine. Well, we came back Monday night, and in the middle of the night, I was still gasping for air. So I actually walked out on the front porch and I fell asleep, like on the front porch. And then, like, I wake up in the morning, so I had two distressing things happen the next morning. First of all, this neighbor of mine comes by, he says, listen, you're having problems? You should really talk it out, you know. Okay? When I finally got rid of him, so I fell asleep again, the next thing I knew, I said, I was hit very hard that morning by the Hamadiyah. I meant the Hamadiyah, it hit me very hard when the guy threw it, you know, onto the front porch. So that wasn't much. So yes, I do have a scraped floor. I don't mean to say, okay, that we're on this level or we're on this madrega. Not by any sense of the imagination. But I mean to suggest a certain attitude. I have my, 11-year-old Chevy Astro, which a couple of years ago pulled up next to, maybe that was my 89 Ford, I don't remember, but I pulled up next to someone's Lexus. And he looked at, we were in the same class in yeshiva, and he looks up at me and says, well, you're a Rebbe. That's what you got. That's what I got. He wasn't going to get away with that. I cut him off. which my Astro still does. You still can't crash him. I came out to him. I said, well, what was that supposed to mean exactly? He says, well, I didn't mean to again insult you, but he said, listen, I said to him, obviously you can't afford anything. I said, wait a second. Hold, just right there. I said to him, how much does it cost? You know how much I pay in Schar Limit every year? Looks at me, Schar Limit? What does that mean? He said, guess how much I pay Schar Limit every year, between my boys and girls. He looks at me and says, I don't know. He says, well, it comes out to about $3,000 a month. Okay? I said to him, how much does it cost to lease a Lexus? He says, I don't know. For $3,000 a month, I think you can get three of them. He says, this is my Lexus. This is how I want to live my life. It's not an issue of what I have or what I don't have. It's an issue of where I want to put my impetus in life. You know, where I want to be and what I decide I want to be happy with. So I said to him, there's a person that's driving this real fancy car, Maserati, that he just got, and he pulls up next to, remember the old Dodge Darts? You know, it's before your times. Anyway, it's really a yeshivish thing, a little matchbox thing, and he pulls up next to him, and he looks out, and this yeshivish guy says to him, he says, huh? You think you have a Maserati? He says, tell me something. You have a bed in your car? I don't have a bed. I have a bar. I don't have a bed, huh? He says, the back seat fell out a long time ago, and there's this platform over there, a mattress. I lay down, I go to sleep. You don't have that. Anyway, this really felt horrible, so he takes his Maserati into the dealer, and he says, you got to do something for me, you know? So finally, they order this real Italian headboards from who knows where, and they get this really gorgeous, absolutely fantastically gorgeous bed, and he has it put into his car, and he's driving all around the place, and finally he sees his friend with the Dodge Dart, and pulls up right next to him, and he wants to show him his bed. He says, ha-ha! He's banging on the window, bang on the window. The bingo's all misty. He doesn't know what's going on. Finally, the guy rolls down the window. He says, please don't bother me when I'm taking a shower, okay? So, There is a sense, it's not that you can't enjoy life, it's the question is what you do with life. Alright? So I want to tell you, we have a scrape floor. We do have a plywood tabletop, because the table that we got for our chasana, the furniture table, we had far outgrown it. And we went around looking for a new table. We went around to all the furniture stores, and we heard prices of $2,000, $4,000, $6,000, $8,000. And finally, one of my sons had this grandiose idea. He said, "Todd, the table is covered anyway." So we did. What we did was we kept the bottom, we kept the base of the table. So when you look, you still see the furniture bottom. And instead of $6,000, $7,000 for a new table, I went out and bought a piece of plywood for $120. Had my local publisher come by, built a little rim, even built these two things that extend from both sides. And it's covered with the tablecloth all week anyway. And people was concerned, "We're looking all over such a table. Where do you get it?" I was going to kick out of it. And I go, "Here, Baropak lumber." No problem. Right? Now, what basically Nishle is trying to tell us is that there is a false illusion of happiness and security, which people want sometimes in terms of what they put into their homes. And, you know, if it would work, it would be a halbitzara. But it doesn't necessarily work. It doesn't really give a person what he wants, unless he uses it right. And that's why the pasuk contrasts the two things. There is someone who builds a nice house, but it becomes a migdal oiz, shem Hashem. It becomes a base for what he feels he can do for the world. And as a result, yaretz tzadik v'nisgav, it goes with him wherever he is. And then there is someone who kind of builds a fortress around him and locks himself into somewhat a life of misery. And I remember visiting a person in the hospital who was very sick. And, you know, he said he was so depressed. And I said to him, "But you have such a gorgeous home in Muncie. Think about it." He said, "That's what depresses me." He said, "I'm here. What does it help me that I have a gorgeous home in Muncie?" Right? We have no guarantee. Chabad Chaim used to say that a hospital is a Kadosh Baruch Hu's prison sentence. We have no guarantee that we're going to be in our house. So, I'm sure some of you are thinking, this is what I came here for, to give me a guilt trip that I got a new carpet or something. And we have a very fine audience over here. And if you weren't such a fine audience, some of you would throw shoes at me. And even though Jews don't throw shoes because you don't want to lose your shoe, we just bang by Haman. Never noticed that? We never threw shoes. That's stupid. I mean, what do you lose your shoe for? We bang by Haman. We don't give things away so fast. Yid went and he gave to his partner, his Italian partner. He decided to offer him a transplant. He gave him a kidney, and the guy was so happy, and he bought him a tremendous present. And then he gave him a blood transfusion. I didn't get such a big present. He says, "How can you not give me such a good present now?" He says, "Now I have Jewish blood in me." You know, it's a different story, right? So just don't bang yet. Okay, don't bang yet. I am not saying, Rabbi Isai, that we shouldn't enjoy life. There is a Yerushalmi, my father used to always share it with me, that if you don't go to the Swiss Alps and see it once in your life, and Rabbi Hashem's tain is on you, I created such a beautiful world. Where were you? Why aren't you using it? One of the reasons that we eat all of that fruit on Chemishas HaBishrat is because there is a Yerushalmi also that says that the Kadosh Baruch Hu said, "I created all of these sweet peiros." What do you mean you didn't take it? It's like a bazillion. Someone gives you a present. What do you mean that you didn't take it? So we take this simple minig, which is supposed to be generate a sense of, the Rabbeinu Shem says, "I want you to enjoy life. And I want you to have an appreciation and a sweet taste for all of the sweet fruit." And what do? We turn it into another means of competition, and each one has to outdo each other. And now there's this new thing. If you have a way to have a chasanim and kalas at home, and all of a sudden you get from your mechutin a nice shavasa shvat package, you know, new thing that you have to give. Of course, you have to send one back. That's the problem. Right, so you go out and you buy this $50 one, then you get this $100 one, you got to want to buy the $200 one, right? Then they say like $250, there's no end to it. We take things that were meant to teach us to try to enjoy life, and we're biting into the wrong part of the fruit. There's a story of a Yemenite family that after with tremendous mesiras nefesh and much trial and tribulations, and having overcome unbelievable challenges, made it to Eretz Yisrael. When they came to the gateway of Yerushalayim, they saw a strange-looking fruit, and the father asked, "What is that?" And someone said, "You don't know what rimonim are?" He said, "I can't believe it. I learned about it. This is the first time I have an opportunity to see it. This is the first time I have an opportunity to taste it." And he cut it up, and he gave it to his family. And as they ate it, they became like it was They couldn't even swallow it. And then the father drew the conclusion. He said, "We probably don't have enough schusim to enjoy the sweet taste of Eretz Yisrael." And they fell to the floor and they began to cry. And someone came by and said, "What are you crying about?" He says, "We see that we don't even feel the sweetness in the fruits of Eretz Yisrael." He says, "By the way, which part did you eat?" He says, "Naturally, we threw away the pits and we were eating the flesh of the rima." He says, "No, you're supposed to eat the pits. You're biting into the wrong thing." The Rabbeinu Shalom really gave us a life to enjoy and created many opportunities for us to enjoy life. But you can be holding on to the same fruit, and if you bow down to the wrong aspect of it, if you bow down to the wrong part of it, then it tastes bitter. You think you have a remind, and it's such a pity because you could have the same thing with the right perspective and you could enjoy it. The Bnei Yisrael says one of the reasons that Chamisha Esrei B'Shvat has become such a major Yom Tov, or that it is in Klal Yisrael, is that we all know, Chazal tell us, Arboim Yoim Kaidim Yitziras Avlad, 40 days before a baby is created, Machrizin, they call out in Shemayim, Bas Ploini Leploini, that the daughter of so-and-so should marry so-and-so. 40 days before a baby is created. So we all come down with our Zivuk. Zakta B'nei Yisrascha, Chamisha Esrei B'Shvat is a great day to be mispal for a good Shidduch, for a good Esrig, and for a good Shidduch. Why? Because Chamisha Esrei B'Shvat is Arboim Yoim Kaidim Yitziras Avlad for the entire world. There is a machlokes when the world was created. Machlokes Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Yeshua. According to Rabbi Yeshua, the Nisan Nivra Ha'olam, the world was created on Nisan. If the world was created on Nisan, and you figure 5-6 days before is Shesh Yisimei Bereshis, so Chamisha Esrei B'Shvat is 40 days before the creation of the world. And just like 40 days before the creation of every individual embryo, the Rabbeinu Shalom has already decided who its mate is going to be. By nature of its metzias in this world, we all come down with a mate. So therefore, the same is true in general for the world at large. So Chamisha Esrei B'Shvat is a good time to be mispal for a shidduch. So I'm sure you're looking at me, you're saying, wait, I got wrong speech over here. I should be saying this on the other side of the wall, right? All those guys in here, right? The ones in here, l'chayra, you're thinking, hey, too late for me, right? It's not true. Because l'chayra, what does the B'nai Yisrascha mean? Every single person is mispal for a good shidduch. An old Zayde is 95 years old. He's being mispal now for a good shidduch. The enhancement of a shidduch, or the enhancement of married life, as well as any relationship, is not necessarily good or bad. It changes in the course of life. And every single year, it represents new challenges or new opportunities for couples to come close. Events take place in our lives as families every single year of our life that could, if we approach it from the proper perspective, bring us closer to each other. And it could, if we don't approach it from the proper perspective, drive us away. Drive us away from each other. Drive a wedge between couples or marriages or any kind of relationship. So when the Bnei Yisrascha says that Chamisha Esrei B'Shvat is the right time to daven for a good shidduch, the right time to daven for a good shidduch means every single shidduch in the course of our lives. We're constantly being mispal for our marriages. And it doesn't make a difference how many years you're married. You know, somebody once got up by an anniversary, he says, and it's a special anniversary, and now that we're married for 70 years, his wife says 70 years. He says, we're married 20 years. He says, well, you know what it says in Mitzrayim, they were supposed to be there for 400, they left after 200. He says, why? He says, Kushay Hashibud, because they worked so hard. He says, that's why I consider it a much longer day. But Adam, it's a friend of mine, he's bought his wife a present on for her 50th birthday. She said to him, you never did it till now. He says, he figures once in a yovel it's a good idea. And do it. So Adam Nidin B'chol Yayin. The enhancement of relationships happens every single year. Now, we all know this is the week of the Aseres HaDibris. I told you this, I had a Rebbe in Cheder, he was like in 9th, 10th grade. He would always do this. He would always say, okay, before we begin the Gemara Shir, we'd pick some boy and say, list the Aseres HaDibris. And it never failed every single year that I didn't know it. And he was smart. He did it every second year. This way he figured the kids wouldn't tell each other about it. One year, Parshas Yisro, his shir got very big, and there was a problem in the room. They moved him in the base of Medrash, and he was sitting right next to the yarn, right behind the Yaron Kodesh. Didn't realize it. He told someone, "The Aseres HaDibris," and the guy said, "Noichi la'yilcha," and he read it right behind him. So I've told you this vart before. I once heard from Yaakov Galinsky. He said there are two things in the Aseres HaDibris that stayed with us. two mitzvahs everyone has, Anoichi and Lo Yilecha. That attitude, right, is still prevailing. Most of us live a life of Anoichi. That's natural. We're born with that life. We think about ourselves. Rabbi Twersky has this, one of his many Gevaldige books of Musar and Yerushalayim, and he has interesting ideas. And what is, he took the Peanuts column, the Snoopy column, and he has it on top, and underneath, he writes his own Hagois, how it reflects life. That book to me is very chashuv because it gives me a chance to read Snoopy without a guilty conscience. Haven't gotten up to reading the bottom yet, but so far the... Anyway, so one of the things is Lucy says to Charlie Brown, she says, I had the worst cold in the world. Why was it the worst cold in the world? So she zets him over the head and says, because it happened to me, chacham, Right? We all live with a noichi. The world is mine. Stipler writes to someone, he got a letter, the person's complaining, he says, you counted I so many times. So let's try to connect what we've been saying till now. If a person has a natural tendency to think only about himself, to think of I, and therefore we want nice houses, we want nice cars to impress others, because I want to enhance the I. However, in reality, he is making a very big mistake. Not in terms of ruchnius, not just in terms of ruchnius, gashmius, he's making a very big mistake. If you have a chance, gentlemen, take out a sefer Shari Yosher from Reb Shimon, in the Hakdoma, he says a fascinating thing. He says, every person is born, okay, we're born naturally thinking about ourselves. That's the metzius. That doesn't make us bad. That makes us human. That's who we are. The Chavis Lavavis says, when a baby is born, the only thing he knows is the nipple. He doesn't even know there's anything behind it. Later on in his life, he begins to understand that there's a mother. The only thing he knows is his mother, because his mother means milk, his mother means changing his diaper. Later on, he begins to understand there's also a father in the picture. And later on, he begins to understand that there's money. And later on, he begins to worship other things in his life. And at one point, he has to make the cross, he has to step over the threshold from shifting the focus on himself to others. But everyone is born that way. We are all born thinking about ourselves. Several years ago, I was asked to have this in Barapak, all over, once a year on the yard site of Chedva Silbervav. You know, Chedva Silbervav was a woman who Nebuch was diagnosed with Yanam Achla, and she spent her last 3 years in this world going around speaking about Lashon Hara. She's a fascinating person. And I was doing some research, and somebody told me a story that he went with her, or she went with her, to the Kaisel. And she was very rarely in Eretz Yisrael, because she was flying around the world talking and seeking different treatments. She cried her heart out. And when they left, they were in the cab. She said, we have to go back. She says, why? She said, I forgot to daven for myself. She came there with a whole list of people to daven for. And she said she really forgot to daven for herself. Now, there is such a thing as a person totally dismissing the anoichi and living for someone else. But Reb Shimon says that people make a mistake. People make a mistake and they think, okay, I'm going to be a tzaddik. I'm going to forget the anoichi. I'm going to live for someone else. It doesn't work. We are human beings. And as human beings, if you hear Chas V'Shalom so-and-so is in trouble, you give a krechts. But when you hear that you're in trouble, Zaldei B'Shtop Hiten, you cry. That's how we all are. The mistake is when a person tries to quench this anoichi and say it doesn't, it's not, that's not how you enhance a relationship, it's not how you make a nice house, it's not how you build your marriage. What you have to do is what he calls broaden the anoichi. Okay, let me try to explain this a little bit. If you've ever noticed, people that are older, I want to be careful what I'm saying now, people that are older and have not had the schus of getting married have a tendency sometimes, not everyone, but sometimes have a tendency to be more prone to fear, more prone to concern about your health, more prone to different things. Why? Because they're human beings. And as a human being, we grow up thinking about ourselves. When you're forced to get married and have a family, what happens is the anoichi begins to spread, including in yourself, including in thinking about yourself, has to be your spouse. Because if your spouse doesn't have menuchas hanefesh, you won't have menuchas hanefesh. And if your children are in trouble, you're in trouble. So you're forced to shift like the butterfly out of the cocoon into a world where you have to fly away from yourself. You will notice sometimes when people get older and they're retired, once again you run into this problem. You run into this problem that you have to struggle with the anoichi because you no longer have a family that you're forced to think about or work for. It was in Rabbi Olavsky, to grandmothers arguing over who's more sicker than the other. I have this disease, I have that disease, I take this medicine. you know, when I take a medicine, $500, I need this medicine to live, you know how sick I am. And she goes, she pulls out the same medicine, you know. I'm just as sick as you are. And the other one's like shocked, you know, she lost the duel, and she looks and she goes, ah, but I take 500 milligrams, you take only 350, right? That's what happens. Now, it doesn't happen to everyone. There are a lot of bubbies and zaydis that are moiser nefesh themselves for the klal that overcome it. The famous Dr. Wallach, who never got married his whole life. The reason he never got married was because he lived for Klal Yisrael. He lived for others. Rabbi Yosef Chaim Zonnefeld was very close with him, Dr. Wallach, who left a prestigious career in Germany, and he came to Eretz Yisrael, and he gave up his life for Shaarei Tzedek Hospital and to heal people that had no medical attention till then. And he once asked Rabbi Yosef Chaim, he said, what does it mean when it says, Toiv Shebaroifim LeGehenna? The best of the doctors go to Gehenna. So Rabbi Yosef Chaim said, it means you, Dr. Wallach. I said, really? Why? He says, you're going to go into Gan Eden, you're going to see everyone is there, all healed and everything. You're going to say, what do I have nothing to do here? You're going to go marching into Gehenna, and you're going to see people that are wounded, Ruchnius. And in Shemayim, it says, someone doesn't have air with a foot, he has a wounded foot. Someone doesn't have air with his eyes, he's sightless. You're going to spend your whole time in Gehenna healing things. He says, I know you. You're not going to stay in Gan Eden. He says, am I not entitled to Gan Eden? He says, your Gan Eden is helping others. So that's a Toiv Shebaroifim will find their way into Gehenna. I happen to know a person that I'm very close with who's in his 80s, who does a lot for people. And it used to be hard to get appointments with him. Now his door is open from morning till night. So how can you do this? He says, well, Hashem gave me the gift of life. He said, I have a lot of people. I have a lot of people that, my friends that are in wheelchairs, that aren't here, they don't know what's going on. If I'm up and moving around, so it's a gift that Hashem gave me. If it's a gift, I have to use it for others. I'm saying, chas v'shalom, I don't mean to suggest that if someone is late in his life and he's unmarried, that means he's selfish. I mean to say that the battle against the Anoichi is a tougher battle, is a stronger battle. There was a Yid in Tarvadas who was nifter 2 years ago, Rav Nisanul Quinn, Zechut Tzadik Uvracha. He was nifter when he was 97 years old, an amazing person. His mother passed away when she was 110. She went to Eretz Yisrael when she was 70 by boat because she said she wanted to die in Eretz Yisrael. Which he did, but 40 years later. I remember as Bachram, we went to visit her. She was, I think, 105. Rav Quinn was in his 80s. She would say, regards from the Sanal, and she would say, is he wearing his sweater at night? He never puts on his sweater. That was her. This Rebbetzin Quinn, 110 years old, used to go up and down her block and help mothers dress their children in the morning to get onto the bus. They said to her, what are you doing? She says, what would I be doing if not for this? I'd be sweeping, dusting my furniture another 10 times. What's that going to do for me? She says, I'm in this world. That's why God gave me life. I'm in this world to dust. Okay, so I just mean to say, I'm not chas v'shalom suggesting that if someone is a bachelor or he's old, that means he's self-centered. But the battle against being self-centered is a harder battle. Whereas if you're married, you're forced not to be self-centered. But the way to do it is to broaden the anoichi. To include your wife and children into your own life. The famous story of Aryeh Levine went with his wife to a doctor. The doctor said, what's wrong? And he answered, our foot hurts us. Now, let me try to get a little more practical over here. You're on your way home after a very, very busy day. And you really want to go home and you're really hungry. And your cell phone rings. You say you're not answering it. You look at it, you see it's your wife. You decide maybe you should answer. You pick up, and she says, do me a favor, stop by the store and pick up a couple of things for supper. You would very much like to explode and say, you're starting to cook supper? What were you doing all day? I'm in Manhattan and Nova's in the morning tonight. Baruch Hashem, you thought that, and you didn't say that. And you said, sure, no problem. Just text me the list. Or your husband says to you, I'm bringing home a friend for supper. A friend? But now you tell me, you bring home, you know what a hard day I have? I need a guest now for supper to start. Instead, you say, sure, no problem. Okay? So, what happens when your spouse asks you to do something which you really, really ticks you off? You really would love to open up your mouth, which is not a problem. The problem is what comes out of it. So, you have a variety of different solutions, right? Or options, I should say. You could say, no, I'm not doing it. Okay? Which you're going to pay a price for. You could say, I'll do it. But I want to say, when I ask you to do these things, you don't do it for me. I think you're better off saying no. If that's what you're going to do. Okay? You can say to yourself, I better do this because it's not worth not doing it. And you can do it. But even more than that, you can think to yourself, this is an opportunity to enhance my marriage. In other words, when these situations come up, I said the Rabbeinu Shem does this because it is an opportunity for me to enhance my marriage. Now, I've been teaching 8th grade for 25 years. I met all kinds of kids. Every once in a while, you have this kid that's just angry. Whatever you do for him, he's angry. Whatever you say to him, he gets angry. He's angry. You're picking on me. If you don't say anything to him, you're ignoring me. Okay? I know some. I'm not describing your spouse, some of you. I'm describing one of the kids in my class. I've learned over the time that one of the things I do is I begin to ask the kids to do things for me. As I'll say, do me a favor, get me a coffee. Do me a favor, go downstairs and bring me a paper towel. So do me a favor, my car's parked right in front of the yeshiva. Do me a favor in the trunk. I have I have a microphone, bring it up to me. And what happens is the kid, if you want, you don't have to. Most kids like to do that because they get out of class. Comes back and give him this real warm thank you. And I have found so often that opens up relationships. Because in a way I'm lowering myself to appreciate what he's doing. These things, when they pop up in life, it is an opportunity. Okay? I always go, who wants to? Everyone picks up their hand and goes, who wants to? Everyone picks their hand. Clean the room after we all leave today. You know, too late. Your hand's up. Guy said, pick somebody up on the FDR drive. He's standing on the side of the road. He says, going to Muncie, no problem. He takes him, there's a lot of traffic to come to exit 2. He says, get out of my car. So what did I do wrong? He says, I made up, I'm doing an hour of chesed. He said, sorry. Hour's up. Get out. The idea isn't that you're doing it, because, I better do it, You're doing it because you're broadening the anoichi. My life is better if I can do this, okay? And you're not going to, Rav Shimon says this, Yisoid, you're not going to take the anoichi that is in you and destroy it. Everyone thinks about themselves. That's a metzius. We worry about ourselves more than we worry about someone else. We think we're happy for ourselves more than we're happy for anyone else. You're not going to undo that. If you try to undo it, you will most likely fail. What you have to do is broaden it. That yourself includes your wife being happy. In self, yourself includes your kids being happy. It includes your neighbors being happy. And for that matter, it may include having a nicer house. Because if you have a nicer house and a bigger house, you're happy, you can invite more guests. If that's your attitude, then the nice house, the bigger house, and even the white carpet becomes a bracha. That's what the pasuk means. Migdal ois shem Hashem bayar tzadik v'nisgav. If your house is a tower, what is the representation of a tower? It's tall. It invites others to come. It sends out signals for others to say, come with me. If that's the idea, if whatever you're enjoying in your life broadens the anoichi, you're happier and your wife is happier. On the other hand, if you take that same nice house and you're building it as a fortress, now that I have this house, I can't let anyone in, what you're really doing is you're isolating yourself. John Thane, I don't know if you've heard the name, you read in the papers, he spent $1.2 million to redo his office. He's one of the chief officers of Merrill Lynch. When the word got out, it was an explosion. Now he's promising to pay all the money back, right? Here the company was sinking, and he is redoing his office. So $1.2 million, and they're snoring for a federal bailout. Or running into the arms of another bank. And this is a mistake that we all make. You can read the Torah, the Shlomo Melech is saying you can redo your office. But why are you redoing it? If you're broadening the anoichi, it's a bracha. If you want to lock yourself in, then Rachman al Son is the opposite. And that's the mila to come to conclusion, being part of the yeshiva. Being part of the yeshiva, being part of the chabura, coming at night. And I know it requires mesiras nefesh, both on part of the wife and a part of the husband many times. But it means you're part of something. When you're part of something, your anoichi widens. The anoichi within you is not, you're not self-centered on yourself. You automatically open up. Rav Noach Weinberg, Zechut Tzadik Levracha, which really should make a whole shiur for him, but just an amazing person. So he once wrote, he says he touches up the typical American yuppie, the guy that comes from a billion-dollar Greenwich Village house or Pasadena, California house. He says he's individual. He's individualistic, hedonistic, whatever that means, seeking self-actualization, and as a result, he's confused. In other words, the more his parents were successful with the American dream, the more he has success, the more he's confused, and his life is very meaningless. From Rosh Chodesh Shvat till Shavuos, there are no 2 weeks without a Yom Tov. Okay, there's Rosh Chodesh Shvat. 2 weeks later, there is Chamesh Asar B'Shvat. 2 weeks later, there's Rosh Chodesh Adar, Purim, Rosh Chodesh Nisan, Pesach, Pesach Sheni, Lag BaOmer, Rosh Chodesh Yer, Rosh Chodesh Sivan, and Shavuos. Sanzerov said that's to show us Rosh Chodesh Shvat are the seeds of Shavuos. Because what are trees? If trees are planted in an orchard, and there's halachis in terms of Shemitah also, if you have a certain amount of trees at a given distance from each other, not too far, not too close, they support each other, and the entire soil gets a din of a kerem, or gets a din of a tree place, and therefore it has completely different halachis. In other words, trees that are planted next to each other draw energy from each other. If we set our perspective in the right way, our life is a different kind of life. Somebody once said, everything that's chashiv in our world is on the right side, right? Why is our heart on the left side? And the answer is, because you're not supposed to use your heart for yourself, you're supposed to use your heart for someone else. And when someone is standing opposite you, your left is his right. So our heart only has meaning when you do it. And Moshe Rabbeinu, when he gave the Torah in this week's parasha, he spoke to the women first. And the reason he spoke to the women first is because they are the ones that set the tone for this house. They are the ones that set the emunah for this house. Richest man of the world, Baron Rothschild. Very rich. Kings and queens envied him. He once said, one thing's for sure, he'll never die of hunger. And once he walked into his own vault, and by mistake the door slammed behind him. And in his tiled floor and heavy steel reinforced walls, nobody heard him. He had no food with him. He had no cell phone. Threw himself to the ground, and he began to bang and pound, and there was nothing there. 4 days later, when they realized they should check, it was too late. He had died of hunger. Next to more gold than maybe in Fort Knox. He had no pen, so he pierced his skin, and he wrote with blood, "Never ever say, I'm never going to die of hunger. And never ever think that money guarantees you anything, unless you use it for the right things." There are people, unfortunately, that fall into this trap of building a vault for themselves and never come out. And when the beauty of a chabura, beauty of belonging to each other, is we take this trap and we turn it into the Migdal Oiz, and we turn it into a wonderful fortress. And one of the things Rav Noach always used to say is, he said, in Erlich Yid, if you're a Shemitari Mitzvahs, and you're walking around with a yarmulke, or a woman is walking around with a shetel, and you don't have a smile on your face, and you're not really happy, he said, that's a Chil Hashem. Why? Because if you live a kind of life where the purpose of your house is to open up for others, and opportunities are to give, automatically, every single day brings a greater simcha than the one before.